Good morning. We welcome you all to our courtroom today, and we especially welcome two groups from high schools. Monticello High School, would you please stand? The instructor can stand too. Thank you for coming, all of you. You may be seated. And we have students from Monroe High School. Would they stand, please? Thank you. You may be seated. The students are here with a program cleverly entitled Court with Class. It is sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin and this court. Under this program, students from across the state are invited to join us for an oral argument. If they agree to come, then they're sent materials about the case, and they may engage in some activities related to this case. They come, and then they meet with a justice at noon after the... Today, it's going to be a little earlier, if we can. Can the students come at stay after this case for a meeting? Yes? Yes? Good.
So who's up for you?
So we'll do it that way. And they'll meet with the justice. The discussion will be on the procedural aspects of the case, not the substantive law issues that we are about to discuss. By procedural issues, I mean how the court accepts cases and how we decide and publish cases. Does anyone need a summary of the case we're about to hear? If you would like a summary, would you raise your hand? All right. Let me introduce the court to all of you. On my far right is Justice Annette Ziegler. Seated next to her is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate right is Justice Bradley, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. Justice Bradley is the justice with whom you'll meet right after this case. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice Patrick Crooks. To his left, Justice Patience Rovensack. And on the far left, Justice Michael Gableman. With those introductions made, I'll now call our first case for today, 08AP2206CR. State versus Charles Lamar. Arguing on behalf of Mr. Lamar is Donna Heinz, Assistant State Public Defender. Counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning. I am Assistant State Public Defender Donna Heinz, appearing on behalf of Charles Lamar. Mr. Lamar is the appellant in this case, and he is currently serving a sentence in prison for aggravated battery. He comes to the court today asking that he receive credit for 189 days against that sentence that he had previously served under an earlier sentence for the same offense. We believe that he is statutorily entitled to that credit under Wisconsin Statute 973.04. That statute is entitled Credit for Imprisonment Under Earlier Sentence for the Same Crime. It's very short. It states, when a sentence is vacated and a new sentence is imposed upon the defendant for the same crime, the department shall credit the defendant with confinement previously served. We also believe that Mr. Lamar is entitled to this 189 days of credit under the state and federal constitutional protection against double jeopardy. Under those provisions, he is protected against multiple punishments for the same offense, and we believe that if he does not receive this credit, that provision will have been violated. Excuse me. I have prepared a chart, which the marshal has, to submit to the court, which I think will assist in understanding and following along with some of the facts and perhaps aid in our discussion today. I've also provided...
Have you shown this to Ms. Prey?
Yes, she has been provided with a copy.
Does Ms. Prey object to the distribution of this?
I do not. I'll have some comments.
Pardon me? Okay. There was no objection, but Ms. Prey, who's Assistant Attorney General representing the state, said she might have comments about this. So the marshal is distributing this chart. Now I have three or four charts, each done by different people who've looked at this case.
That frequently happens with sentence credit issues.
I know. I wrote Carter.
Hard to understand without a chart sometimes. The facts in the case, fortunately, are undisputed. Mr. Lamar, in 2006, was facing three charges. In count one, he was facing the charge of aggravated battery as a habitual offender. In counts two and three, he was charged with misdemeanor bail jumping as a habitual offender. He entered into a plea agreement with the state whereby he pleaded guilty to counts one and two, and count three was dismissed. That was before Judge Conan. Judge Conan then sentenced him on September 15th of 2006. At that point, on count one, aggravated battery as a habitual offender, he was sentenced to 17 years in prison, consisting of 12 years initial incarceration and 5 years extended supervision. On count two, Judge Conan imposed a concurrent two-year sentence comprised of 1 year initial confinement, and 1 year extended supervision. Mr. Lamar then began serving that sentence. After a period of time, he sought post-conviction relief. Specifically, he asked to withdraw his plea on count one only for aggravated battery as a habitual offender. Judge Conan granted that motion on August 29th of 2007. Judge Conan vacated the judgment of conviction and sentence on count one and permitted him to withdraw his plea to aggravated battery. Because the judge recognized that this sort of vitiated the original plea agreement, he also reinstated count three, the second count of misdemeanor battery as a habitual offender, or misdemeanor bail jumping. That meant count two was unaffected. The original sentence and conviction that was imposed by Judge Conan continued. Mr. Lamar then entered into a second plea agreement with the state. The state agreed to dismiss the repeater allegations, and Mr. Lamar pleaded guilty to aggravated battery under count one and misdemeanor bail jumping under count three. The case was then transferred from Judge Conan to Judge Fiorenza, and Judge Fiorenza held the second sentencing proceeding in this case. That took place on January 3rd, 2008. Judge Fiorenza sentenced Mr. Lamar as follows. On count one, aggravated battery, she ordered him to serve 15 years in prison, 10 years of initial confinement, and 5 years of extended supervision. On count three, misdemeanor bail jumping, she imposed a 9-month sentence to the county jail. These sentences were made concurrent to each other, but consecutive to the previously imposed sentence by Judge Conan on count two. At first, Judge Fiorenza said that because these were concurrent sentences, Mr. Lamar was not entitled to any sentence credit at all. However, trial counsel pointed out that the confinement period that Mr. Lamar had been ordered to serve on count two had expired. As you recall, he had only a 2-year sentence, and only 1 year of that was initial confinement. That had been completed as of March 23rd of 2007. Thereafter, his custody was by virtue of continuing to serve the sentence on count one, and after that was vacated, awaiting the resolution of the proceedings as to count one and count three. Judge Fiorenza, therefore, agreed that Mr. Lamar was entitled to credit from the period of time after he finished his confinement on count two, which was on March 23rd of 2007, and the date of the second sentencing hearing on January 3rd, 2008. The court granted 306 days credit for this period of time, and Mr. Lamar began serving those sentences. He came back, however, again seeking post-conviction relief. This time what he asked for is to be given an additional 189 days so that he would be given credit for all of the period of time he had served under the earlier sentence for aggravated battery that Judge Conan had imposed. He asked for the period of time between the date of sentencing, which was September 15th of 2006, until March 23rd of 2007. This becomes just a little bit confusing here, because what he was seeking is, believed he was entitled to all of the time that he had served under the earlier sentence, which would be from the date of sentencing up till the date it was vacated. However, as I've just indicated, Judge Fiorenza had already granted credit for a period of that time, so he was asking for the remaining period that he had not gotten credit, and that was simply from September 15th of 2006 to March 23rd of 2007.
Counselor, what about the 177 days? Did he get credit for that when he was first sentenced on count one?
Yes, he did.
Well, why isn't he asking for it now if he's asking for the 189 days that went with that count?
He's not asking for that credit because that was a period of pre-sentencing confinement.
I understand that.
Which we believe is controlled by 973.155. Under that statute, this court has interpreted it to say that when you have consecutive sentences, you cannot receive credit against both of the sentences that you have. You can only receive that credit against one of the sentences. He received that credit against count two, so he is not asking for that credit today.
At the first sentencing, was count one consecutive with count two or concurrent?
Concurrent.
Okay, so at that time, he got credit for it. If there had been no repleting, he got credit on both sentences for count one and count two of 177 days, correct?
He did in the beginning, yes.
Okay. And I know the state's argument is you can't have what you're asking for this time either because the sentences are not concurrent. They're consecutive, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So you're buying at least part of that argument when you say he's not asking for the 177 days of pre-incarceration or pre-sentencing incarceration because they're not concurrent, aren't you?
I am.
How is that not inconsistent? That's what I'm trying to get to.
I believe it's not inconsistent because it is our position, very simply, that 973.155 does not control this situation. That 973.155 speaks to custody pre-sentencing. And that the period of time you're asking for is not pre-sentencing, it is post-sentencing. It is time that he served under a prior sentence. It is not before sentence was imposed, it's after sentence was imposed.
I understand exactly what you're saying. That's okay. I still am having a little trouble for me reconciling it, but fine, I understand.
Counsel, how do you get around the State versus Boettcher case? State versus Boettcher seems to make it pretty clear that what you do is, with consecutive sentences, you look at a linear approach. And if you apply that approach here, it seems to me you don't get the 189 days credit. That's what basically, as I understand it, Judge Fiorenza said. Is that not correct?
That is what she said, and that is the position of the Court of Appeals also. It's basically the position of the state today. Mm-hmm. What we are saying, though, is State versus Boettcher interpreted a different statute than we think applies. State versus Boettcher interpreted Section 973.155. That statute, though, only applies to pre-sentencing credit. The plain language of the statute says that it applies to situations for custody where an offender is awaiting trial, during trial, while the offender is waiting imposition of a sentence, and for any parole or probation custody that arises from the same course of conduct that results in the new conviction. Nowhere in that statute does it talk about custody served or confinement served after a sentence is composed while you're actually serving a sentence. That statute does not address the situation before the court. Mr. Lamar's situation is that he was sentenced on September 15th by Judge Conan. He was ordered to serve 12 years of confinement time. He began serving that confinement time and continued to serve it until that sentence was vacated. And that's the period of time that we are asking for credit for, not the pre-sentencing credit, because as Justice Rogan Sack said, indicated, that's pre-sentencing, and that's controlled by 973-155. We agree with that.
Doesn't Boettcher basically say, look, when you've got consecutive sentences, you can't get credit twice for the same period of time?
Boettcher does say that, but again, what Boettcher was doing was interpreting a different statute. It was interpreting 973-155. If it does not apply, then that rule of Boettcher does not apply. The rule that we think applies is the rule set forth in 973-04, and that says very clearly that when a sentence is vacated and a new sentence is imposed, you get credit for all the time against the new sentence that you had served under the old sentence. That's all we're asking for.
Counsel, I'm going to ask your opposing counsel the same question, if I'm able to, and it's this. You've been distinguishing between 973.155 and 973.04. Not only are they distinguished, are they different statutes, allegedly covering different things, time periods, but on the face of the statute, it gives different entities the authority to assess credit. In 973.04, the statute says the department shall credit the defendant. 973.155 deals with the court making and entering a specific finding on the number of days for sentence credit. Seeing that distinction and what could be argued as the plain language of the statute, why are we here? Isn't this something for the, if 973.04 prevails, isn't that something for the, and applies, isn't that something for the department to do?
It is possible that I could have gone and asked the department to apply this credit. However, my experience in dealing with the records office at the various institutions is that they go by what the judgment of conviction says, and they will order the amount of sentence credit that is on the judgment of conviction. Or they, if they think there is a question, they will write to the court and ask the court to clarify what is appropriate in the case. So I sort of short-circuited the process by going to the trial court and asking the trial court to amend the judgment of conviction to add this additional sentence credit.
And I understand that. In fact, in paragraph 9 of the Court of Appeals opinion, it says, we will assume without deciding that the statute applies to sentencing courts. If, in fact, it applies only if a defendant is serving one sentence and that particular sentence is vacated. I know that second sentence is an area of some concern and some dispute. That is, that it applies only to one serving one sentence. But I want to focus on the first of those two. Does 973... How should we deal with this? I don't fault you for saying, hey, the reality is the judge decides and the department follows. And if they have any questions about it, they usually contact the court. Because in most sentencing credit issues, pursuant to statute, it says the court shall make and enter a specific finding of the number of days. But that's not what 973.04 says. So what are we to do? Are we to follow the plain language of the statute? Or are we to use our what we think is our common sense and the way things really work?
Well, I would ask the court to follow the common sense and the way things really work. It would be very complicated if I went to the department. And in fact, who do I go to? I go to a record office and I say, record office employee, Mr. Lamar served some time under the same sentence. Look, there's the same statutes and everything. It's the same date of offense. So give him credit for all this time. And they say, well, gee, I don't know that I can do that. What's the next level? Then you go to a supervisor or you ask counsel for the department and they say, well, I think this is a matter to be decided by the court. Then we're right back in the court. So again, I think as a very practical matter, it was realistic to begin this process where it was likely to end up, in the trial court, asking the trial court to deal with it. As a practical matter, I'm not sure how one gets a as a procedural matter, how one would get the department if they refuse to grant the credit, how one would then proceed at that point. We are used to handling sentence credit matters in the trial court, then appealing to the Court of Appeals, and then coming before this court if necessary. It is interesting to note that actually the earlier versions of this statute did say that the trial court was to grant the credit. I think in this current language, it was an attempt sort of to make things easier for the trial court. They didn't have to deal with it. The department would just automatically do it. But I think it's clear that in a situation such as we have here, it becomes more complicated. It's more complicated because it isn't a single sentence. It's two sentences in this case, and so who is the one to decide how much time he served under that? I think it's most appropriate to go back to the trial court. As I indicated, however,
Before you start, if this count one had not been vacated, right? Count one had not been vacated. This 189 days would have been credited to him, correct?
Yes.
As well as the 177 days?
Yes.
Because you had concurrent sentences, right?
That is correct.
And you had pre-sentence custody and post-sentence custody?
Yes.
Okay. So now he withdraws this, and you don't have this on your timeline. He withdraws his plea, and it's withdrawn April 29th, 2007. That's in the middle.
Actually, the motion is granted on August 29th of 2007.
Okay, August 29th, 2007. That's when it was granted, right?
Yes.
And they're willing to give him everything from that March 2007 through the end. Is that right?
Yes.
On the theory that at that point, March 23, he had served out count to 1 year.
Yes.
On the basis of this. And so he's missing that. Nevertheless, he is... Then he pleads guilty, doesn't he, to the same charge?
Without the repeater enhancement, yes.
Without the repeater. And the state says, whoops, because you're vacated, you're going to be more, you lose your credit. Isn't this a disincentive to ask that your plea be vacated?
Absolutely. We always knew that there was one disincentive, and that was the one that occurs with the 177 days of pre-sentencing confinement. Here we have a different period. You've actually served in prison part of your sentence, and now they're going to say if you vacate that and you receive a consecutive sentence, you don't get that either.
No, I have a little trouble with that argument, as did Justice Rogensack. May be true, but that got converted towards count one. That 177 days plus the 189 was counted, was given credit for the robbery charge.
Or the bail jumping charge.
Pardon me?
The bail jumping charge.
Both. Because they were concurrent sentences.
It's up until the point that count one was vacated.
I don't understand why it can switch. Under the law, he got credit for it. Under both counts, because it was concurrent. Now, because the second judge says they're consecutive, there's a switch. Now, I understand if it's concurrent, you credit both. And I understand if it's consecutive, you only credit one. So otherwise, what you've done is converted the consecutive into concurrent. I dig that. But I don't see how you can switch what 177 days... just because there's a vacating in August of 2007. That's a year later.
That's true. The reason I believe that the law supports that is State versus Betcher. If 973-155 applies to pre-sentencing credit, then it's going to apply to pre-sentencing credit at any time that you are sentenced. And he was resentenced in 2008, and at that time, his sentence was made consecutive. Then as to this Court's interpretation of pre-sentencing credit under Betcher, he's not entitled to it. That's why we have not asked.
Plus, you're saying it's while the offender is awaiting trial under 973-155, and it doesn't change over just because he's ultimately sentenced and credited. You're saying it stays always as pre-sentencing.
Yes. Subsection 3 of 973-155 says that the credit provided in the earlier subsection, which is all the pre-sentencing time, shall be computed as if the convicted offender had served such time in the institution to which he or she has been sentenced. As if. It makes it clear, I think, that this is not post-sentencing service of sentence time. And yet that is what Mr. Lamar was doing. After September 15th, he was serving his sentence, and he continued to serve that sentence for the next 189 days for which he has not received credit against the current sentence. And the clear language of 973-04 says that he's entitled to that credit. That if you have a sentence and you begin serving it, and that sentence is vacated and a new sentence is imposed, that you get credit for the time that you previously served on a sentence for that offense. That's all we're asking for. This is an unusual situation, one that does not arise all the time.
Paragraph 8 of the Court of Appeals says, the answer to whether Lamar is entitled to additional sentence credit lies in the fact that his second sentence for the aggravated battery charge was imposed consecutively to the earlier bail jumping. Had the trial court, the second sentencing, ordered Lamar to serve concurrently with the first charge, we would agree the contention he's entitled to all the terms served. So any time this, do you read this to say any time the second court says consecutive, poof, there goes all the sentence credit?
For the time that he was serving under an earlier sentence, yes, that's what they're saying.
Then paragraph 9 says, 973-04, if it applies only if a defendant is serving one sentence and that particular sentence is vacated. Here he was serving two.
Yes.
Do you agree with that sentence?
No, I do not. There is nothing within 973-04 that restricts it when you're serving a single sentence, and there is nothing that restricts it in the manner that the state would argue, and that is that it also extends to where you have more than one sentence, but they're imposed concurrently the second time around. The state maintains that subsection 973-04 applies or does not apply only in the present situation where you have consecutive sentences at the second sentencing proceeding. But there's nothing in the statute that says that. Nothing whatsoever. And furthermore, I'm sorry, my red light is on. May I finish?
You may complete it.
That means that it never will be applied. It reads it out completely and makes it meaningless, because the state's theory is that once the sentences are vacated, everything then becomes pre-sentencing and is governed by 973-155. So there's no reason to even have 973-04 to deal with confinement served under an earlier sentence, because according to the state, it's all pre-sentencing time. It's not post-sentencing time, it's pre-sentencing. But that means that you ignore the reality that there was a sentence, a valid sentence, that was in effect during that entire period of time until it was vacated.
Thank you, Ms. Hintz. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Eileen Prey, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Wisconsin.
Good morning.
I am Assistant Attorney General Eileen Prey, and I represent the state. Recently, this court has struggled with sentence credit issues on repeated cases, and in Carter and Alandis Johnson, it reiterated the general purpose of sentence credit. And the general purpose of granting sentence credit is to make sure that a person doesn't serve more time than they've been sentenced to. However, also in Alandis Johnson, this court said, the trial court also needs to make sure that the person serves all of the time that that's been imposed in their sentence. Thus, that's why sentence credit is mandatory. A person, an offender, is required to serve on a day-to-day basis all of the days of the sentence that have been imposed. Not any more, not any less. In this case, the sentence credit that was given Mr. Lamar by both the trial court and the Court of Appeals ensures that he will serve every single day of his 17-year consecutive sentence. Not a day more, not a day less.
He's already served 189 days. He's been in prison, hasn't he?
Yes, he's been in prison.
Okay. And what did that count towards? Only the bail count?
Only the bail count. And that is because the sentences were imposed consecutively.
The second sentence was composed
correct.
Consecutively. The first one was concurrent. Aren't you then, in effect, going against the first judge and favoring the second judge? Because the first judge said concurrent. And I think you'll agree that if there was no vacating the count one, the 189 days would count for him, would be credited,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
The second judge has vacated not only the sentence, but all the credit. Is that right? That's your position.
My position is the second judge on resentencing had the discretion, and Mr. Lamar is not saying that he didn't, to impose those sentences consecutively.
Absolutely.
And once they're imposed consecutively, they are served in a linear fashion.
189 is just about half a year. Suppose he waited and it was 5 years before he vacated the sentence. What would your position be then?
It would be the same amount of credit because once he had been released out of the 1 year confinement time on the bail jumping, he would have been held in custody solely on the aggravated battery. So the credit would be entirely the same. What the court in this case did was ensure that Mr. Lamar is serving the 17 years, and he's not serving any more. If you agree with what Mr. Lamar says and how to interpret 973.04, he will be serving 189 days less than the 17-year consecutive sentence.
Counsel, how is it your opposing counsel has pointed our direction to 973.04 quite properly?
Right.
And does it seem to you that there is some tension between the language of 973.04 and the second sentencing where the sentence was consecutive? And if so, how is it that you're asking this court to resolve that tension to make sure that the language of 973.04 is in harmony with the intent, the obvious and, well, seems to me the plain intent of the second judge that the sentences be consecutive without violating 973.04?
I think that in order to read the two statutes in harmony, you can't read either one in isolation. And so that 973.04, which says that a person should be credited with the time previously served, has to be read in conjunction with the type of sentence and the sentence structure that is ultimately imposed. If there is a consecutive sentence and the court had the ability to impose a consecutive sentence, then at that point, after everything's resentenced and there's a sentence structure, at that point you don't take a snapshot at the time before the sentence was vacated. You take the snapshot after the vacated sentence was reimposed. At that point, that period of time, that 189 days, is not being served in satisfaction of the aggravated battery. It was served solely in satisfaction of the bail jumping. So that I think we, the state is saying that you can rely on the plain reading of both statutes, but along with that, you need to read them together so that there will be different, it will be implied in different ways depending on the outcome of the second sentencing. If there were concurrent sentences first and there are concurrent sentences on reimposition, the credit would be awarded. If there were consecutive sentences first and on reimposition, they were made concurrent, it would be awarded. If there were consecutive sentences first and consecutive sentences later, the credit would be awarded on a day-to-day basis.
Or simply, or the simplest hypothetical, if there had been but one of them.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Or the most simple hypothetical, if there had been but one sentence.
Correct. And that's where I think Mr. Lamar's, one of the areas where Mr. Lamar's distinction between 973.155 and 973.04 just doesn't work at all. If you've got a single sentence and you're looking and it's been vacated and you get credit for it after it's being reimposed, for sure you would look at the time from custody to the original sentencing that they would be awarded. It's a very artificial kind of distinction to say that 973.04 only applies to post-sentencing and 973.15 applies to pre-sentencing. And in fact, even 973.15, when it lists those time periods, the awaiting trial, awaiting sentencing, those specifically said are not limited by enumeration.
Counselor, if this second sentencing had been concurrent,
yes,
with the first sentencing, in your view, would he have gotten credit for the 177 days, too, as well as the 189 that he's asking for?
Yes, yes. And if you look at, I don't know how to pronounce it, but Tuscher, State mm-hmm. versus Tuscher, it says that wasn't the holding, but that was what they granted. They okay. just, and they didn't grant after the vacation of the sentence. But yes, okay. I would absolutely agree.
So I think you said when at some point that you'd like to comment about this chart.
Yes, I think I don't disagree with the timeline at all. What I do disagree with are there notations where Ms. Hintz says that the 177 days is only applies 973.15, and then that, and particularly on the bottom, this sort of bottom section where she's differentiated between what she believes the days that 973.04 applies to and the days that 973.15 apply to. I believe that the sentence credit statute applies to the whole sentencing here for many reasons. First of all, 973.155, as I said, those listed things are not limited by enumeration. The sentence credit statute applies to all custody that is served in connection with the sentence that is imposed. In this case, once the sentence was vacated, all the time that Mr. Lamar spent in custody was awaiting trial, was awaiting resentencing, until he was resentenced. Now, he's not credited with all that time because under Boettcher, he was serving a different sentence first, and you serve it on linear fashion, but 973.155 applies. Moreover, the Boettcher kind of analysis where you get day-for-day credit is not just a pre-sentence kind of concept. That is the way consecutive sentences work. And it is consistent with other statutes that say that you serve a consecutive sentence as one continuous sentence. You don't serve part of it concurrently, and then part of it consecutively, and then part of it concurrently. That is not allowed by law. You serve it as one continuous sentence.
Hey, may I ask, the first judge who imposed the sentence seems to have imposed 17 years and 12 years of confinement. Is that right?
That's right. At that point, it was concurrent, but the first sentence was 17 years, 12 years confinement, 5 years extended supervision. The concurrent sentence, the one-in-one on the bail jumping, was subsumed under that. So the controlling sentence was the aggravated battery.
Now, Can you get inside the mind of the second judge in imposing a 10-year of confinement and 5 years of extended supervision?
I don't know for sure. I'm thinking maybe what you're getting at is the second sentence was exactly the same when you take into consideration that it was consecutive. It also became a 17-year sentence. It was 10 years of confinement added on to the 1 year from the bail jipping. So there's 11 years and 5 years of extended supervision added on to the 1 year of the bail jumping. So it happened that they turned out to be both 17 years in length. There was no mention in the sentencing transcript that that's what the court was intending to do. And in fact, the court imposed the sentence before considering the sentence credit, which is the appropriate way to do it. So I can't say that that was on the mind of the judge when she did that. She did impose the maximum sentence at that point because there weren't enhancers, and the reason for that was the very severe injuries that the victim had suffered, who suffered a stroke from the beating and had some permanent disabilities. But I other than that, I can't tell you why the sentence was imposed and turned out to be the equivalent sentence. I think that's one of the reasons why there cannot be any due process claim that this was an vindictive kind of sentence.
But. Counsel, I want to return to paragraph 9 of the Court of Appeals opinion, as I indicated earlier in questioning that I would do. And the two sentences I want to focus on, I will again read aloud in paragraph 9. We will assume without deciding that the statute applies to sentencing credits. This is dealing with 973. Sentencing courts. Thank you, Chief. This is dealing with 97304. If, in fact, it applies only if a defendant is serving one sentence and that particular sentence is vacated. I note by reading pages 10 and 11 of your brief, it appears to me that you disagree with the second sentence of the Court of Appeals.
I do, yes.
In fact, in page, I think, 10 in your brief, you say the state does not contend that WIS Stat 97304 may only be applied in single-sentence situations.
And I don't think the Court of Appeals fully meant that either. They said that undoubtedly. But in another part of the decision, they also said that if it had been concurrent, they would have allowed the credits.
That's the next sentence.
Yeah.
So to the extent that this sentence, if in fact it applies only if a defendant is serving one sentence, et cetera, to the extent that that is read as stated, you disagree with that. It can apply in multiple
Yes, but it applies differently dependent on the sentence structure that is imposed after the vacation.
Then I want to focus on the first of those two sentences. Mm-hmm. We will assume without deciding that the statute applies to sentencing courts, again referring to 97304. I sit here and I look at 97304. I know that the predecessor statute to 97304 said it was the trial court that would do the sentencing credit, that 97304 says the department shall credit the defendant. Mm-hmm. I know that the other statute we're dealing with today, 973.155, was enacted substantially after 97304. 15 years rings in my mind. I may be wrong on that, but substantially afterwards. And, of course, the language of 973.155 indicates the court shall make findings regarding the sentence credit, essentially. So why is everyone overlooking what I think is the plain language of the statute?
All right. first of all, in 973.155, and I don't have the full statute in front of me, but there's a later section in there that also allows if after the sentencing the offender has some problems with the sentence credit, their first avenue of relief is to go to the Department of Corrections. Do you see that? I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me. Anyway, there is, you know, a process for bringing these sorts of issues to the Department of Corrections. I do agree with Ms. Hintz that, generally speaking, the department relies on what's on the judgment of conviction.
I mean, I sit here, there's a line in some poem I remember, you speak to me of practicality, blah, blah. Well, and that's what everyone's speaking about, but the legislature intentionally used these words. And all through 973, and there's lots of pages, sometimes they speak of the department, lots of times it's the court or the sentencing court, and so we can be practical, or we can follow the words of the statute. Yeah. And what should this court be doing?
Yeah. I'll give you my very personal opinion, and it is me only speaking, that if I were God, I would make all of sentence credit decisions to be an administrative process, and just like they do in the federal system, and they would set up a system to look at them, they get all the records together and make a decision, and then the court review would be a writ of certiorari. Unfortunately, I'm not God, and I can't make that decision, and I think that would take a statutory change. I can only tell you that there is a practical problem in that this would probably end up in a court again. Now, it may end up, if you strictly required the department to make a decision and the offender was unhappy with that, the avenue for getting into court, I would guess, would be a writ of certiorari rather than a part of the criminal appeals.
And the review would be, did the department construe the statutes properly, or was it outside their authority?
I believe
that's what the issue would be on cert,
correct.
Wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Same one that we have here.
With regard to 97304, and again, it's such a short statute. I love it, because we usually have real long statutes.
Yeah.
So this one is short, and it says, credit for, the title is credit for imprisonment under earlier sentence for the same crime. I look at the title. I know the law regarding titles, but I look at the title and I say, seems to apply here. Then the one sentence, it says, when a sentence is vacated, okay, we have that here, and a new sentence is imposed upon the defendant for the same crime, you're with me, I'm right there, the department shall credit the defendant with confinement previously served. This statute, when a sentence is vacated and a new sentence is imposed upon the defendant for the same crime, seems to be a much more specific statute than what I will denominate the general sentencing credit statute of 973.155. Why don't our rules of the specific trumps the general apply here, especially given the fact that the specific was enacted many years before the general one was, and I assume when they enacted the general, they were mindful of the specific that previously existed?
Because it would result in absurd results and unreasonable results when applied in the consecutive sentence situation. Let me give you an example that's maybe a more extreme example that'll really show, I think, how applying the statute in a consecutive sentence situation would be absurd. You'd have, let's say there were four instead of two. There were four concurrent sentences originally, and the offender withdrew his plea on three of those. And then on resentencing, the sentencing judge imposed consecutive sentences, those three not only consecutive to the non-vacated one, but consecutive to each other. So you've got a string of four consecutive sentences. If you interpreted the statute in isolation, as Mr. Lamar is asking, the court would have to apply that credit off of each of those four sentences, and it would totally obliterate any consecutive nature of those sentences. We have said that the court has the ability to impose consecutive sentences. How can they in that kind of situation? And particularly if you don't buy Mr. Lamar's argument that they didn't get credit for the pre-sentence time, In this case, if they were requesting the 177 days plus the 189, it would totally obliterate the consecutive nature of the sentences. And Mr. Lamar is not suggesting they couldn't impose consecutive sentences. The only way that you can implement a consecutive sentence in this case is to apply the Boettcher analysis of day-for-day credit.
Counsel, if all the time spent prior to resentencing is governed by the general sentence credit statute, 973.155, then why is there any need for 973.04? Isn't it surplusage?
Because in concurrent, if you look at the Tuscher case, in concurrent sentence cases, it's sort of complicated to talk about, but in that case, the person had two concurrent sentences, served a bit of time. One of their sentences was vacated and then resentenced later. And the way Tuscher looked at that was that using 973.04, they gave the person credit, because it was reimposed as concurrent, I don't know if I said that, that they gave the person credit using 973.04 from the date of custody until the date the sentence was vacated. However, then the offender didn't get credit for the time between the date that it was vacated and it was reimposed because he was serving another sentence. So they used both statutes, and they needed to use both statutes because it wasn't just a straight, you know, concurrent thing. It changed as it was vacated and reimposed. And you need it for single sentence situations, which is what, you know, the main reason it was, probably what was in the minds of the legislature when they were writing it.
So, except at the beginning of our discussion, you've indicated that you disagree with the Court of Appeals sentence that suggests that it applies only in single sentence.
Right, because I believe it also applies to concurrent sentences.
But the way you're applying it in this case says, hey, you apply it first to the one sentence that has not vacated. Because that's what you're doing. You're applying the 189 days only to count two that was
correct,
not vacated.
Because they're consecutive. And that once the sentence was vacated and once the sentences were made consecutive, that time at that snapshot and time, you interpret the time previously served. I know there's problem with the tense, but I think you have to look at the snapshot of time after the sentences were reimposed. At that time, when you've got consecutive sentences, that period of time was not served in satisfaction.
You have to do that because while Mr. Lamar was serving the 189 days, the state thought he was serving it on count one, right?
That's right.
He thought he was serving it on count one.
That's right.
Everybody thought he was serving it on count one. And then, poof,
well,
it's taken away.
I wouldn't say
because,
poof.
No. It's not poof because
it's a good legal term.
You're going to look at this, what is it, a year plus, 2 years almost, later, and say, not true. We're going to credit it only towards the one sentence.
When Mr. Lamar pled guilty, when he withdrew his plea and when he pled guilty the second time, he was specifically informed that the court could impose consecutive sentences. And at that point, I think he had every reason to believe he wasn't going to get credit for that period of time if they were consecutive.
Well, I don't know about that since sentence credit is not so easy to determine. If he had only been sentenced on count one, and then that was vacated, what would he get credit for on the same exact second sentence?
He would have gotten credit for all the time that he
177 plus 189.
Correct.
Because
you
would have viewed that as all pre-sentence, because you would have viewed that as he is awaiting trial. Of course, he wasn't awaiting trial. He was there. It's a fiction. He was there serving the sentence. I mean,
That's what happens when you vacate a sentence, however. You change what happened before. The sentence is no longer there.
Well, that's the poof.
That's the poof, yeah.
Poof. Exactly. I mean, that's what the state is saying. You're just changing everything. Mm-hmm. And you're saying he's awaiting trial, but he's really not awaiting trial on that 189 days. He's not awaiting trial until they vacated it and then moved forward. But the way this is all done, it's awaiting trial.
Right, so, right. And again, I want to...
It's not awaiting trial because you'd credited it only to the count two.
I want to also I want to say again that the listing in 973.155 is a list that's not limited. That it says right in the beginning.
It includes. So what would you add to that?
Well, I think you have to go back to the original statement of what sentence credit is, which is giving custody for time that is served in connection with the sentence. It covers all custody that is served in satisfaction of sentence.
Well, if you do that, you're back to 973.04, which is a sentence imposed for the same crime. Now, if you're just going to look at custody in connection with the course of conduct for which sentence was imposed, and that equals for the same crime here.
I'm sorry. I didn't follow you.
I wanted to know, do you have to add a 4 in sentence credit 973.155 to cover this case? Do you have to add a 4?
I don't believe so.
One do you come under, 1, 2, or 3?
Well, I believe it comes under 1, 2, and 3. Once the sentence is vacated, that was time spent in custody awaiting a trial. He didn't get a trial. He pled guilty.
As soon as he completed count two, he falls under 1, 2, and 3.
I think all the time beforehand falls under that. It's just that he's not getting credit for it because under Betcher, under this analysis, he was serving another sentence, and that severed the custody, the connection with the custody.
So the state's position is once you vacate, then you're back to ground zero, and you treat this as if he had not gotten sentenced for the count that's vacated. And you look at it afresh, starting at initially.
I wouldn't go to that extent.
Would
say
you draw the line?
What my position is that you need to read both statutes together, and that you need to apply the sentence credit law to those situations where a sentence is vacated. You don't ignore 973.04, but it has to be read in conjunction with understanding how the sentence is ultimately reimposed.
Well, I
get a little uncomfortable in making broad statements that go beyond this case in the sentence credit, because I've looked enough sentence credit to know there's a whole there. Once you think you've seen every permutation, there's another one that comes about. So I think it's important to be careful.
So how do you harmonize them? What's your theory of harmonization other than case by case?
The theory of harmonization is that let's just take this. Yeah, I did. If you're asking for a holding.
Well, I always ask for a holding so you can give it to me, but what's your theory of harmonization?
My theory of harmonization is that when a sentence was originally imposed concurrently, it's vacated and another sentence is, the first sentence is not vacated. If the vacated sentence is ultimately imposed consecutively, then the person is not entitled to credit that was served in satisfaction of the non-vacated sentence. And that They are entitled to credit once they've been released from that non-vacated sentence. And that's pretty much what I wrote down for the holding.
So what's your holding?
Okay, and I'll read it. With respect to the 973.04, an offender is not entitled to additional sentence credit pursuant to WSSTAT 973.04 when the vacated sentence was originally imposed concurrent to a separate sentence. That separate sentence is not vacated. The vacated sentence is reimposed consecutively to the non-vacated sentence, and at the time and the time that the defendant requested was served in satisfaction of the sentence which was not vacated. That's a lot of words for a concept that isn't as difficult as it sounds, but I do think it's important to be specific and use careful wording in these cases. But thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Hintz?
Counsel has suggested today that the reason we need 973.04 under her analysis, if everything becomes pre-sentencing once the sentence is vacated, is because if there are concurrent sentences, you need to apply this, and suggested that in the Toysia case, that's exactly what the trial court did. I've done a brief review here of the case, and I don't see, having reviewed this before, I could be wrong, but I don't think that there's anywhere in that case where the court indicated that it was using 974.03. I think it was just using 973.155 because people don't think about 973.04. The situation where a person has a sentence vacated and a new sentence is imposed and the question of sentence credit coming up is a pretty unusual one. It's even more unusual when the sentence changes from concurrent to consecutive. So we're talking about a very, very narrow circumstance here, the one that's faced by Mr. Lamar. But yet it's one that the statute 973.04 speaks to directly. The legislature enacted this statute to deal with this particular situation. It enacted 973.155 to deal with pre-sentencing credit. But 15 years later, in between the two times, if this had been Mr. Lamar's situation and he had received concurrent sentences the second time around, he would have gotten the 189 days credit. He would not have received the 177 days credit because 973.155 sentence credit for pre-sentencing was not in effect. We are only asking the court today to apply the plain language of each one of the statutes. The credit does not change the nature of a sentence. And that's almost what the state is suggesting here, that if you give the credit, well, then it becomes concurrent. It doesn't become concurrent or consecutive by virtue of the sentence credit itself. The court imposes a sentence, decides in the exercise of discretion whether it should be concurrent or consecutive, and then applies the appropriate sentencing credit statute. If it is pre-sentencing credit, it applies 973.155. In the unusual situation where there has been some time served under an earlier sentence, which is a different category of custody. This person is not waiting to see what's going to happen to him. He's not wondering what his sentence is going to be. He knows what his sentence was. He began serving that sentence. The prison had this as the controlling sentence in his case. He had 12 years of incarceration and a concurrent 1 year. That 12 years incarceration was the sentence that controlled it. Had his security classification, his programming, where he was going to be placed, was all based on the fact he had a 12-year sentence, not a 1-year sentence. And yet the state would have us ignore all that and say, but once it's vacated, he was really only serving 1 year of confinement. That's not reality. That gives no effect to the sentence that Judge Conan imposed, and that was in effect until he vacated it. Credit doesn't change the sentence. It only, once the court imposes the sentence concurrent or consecutive, the court then has to decide how much credit is this person entitled to under the statutes. And in, under one statute, he is entitled to pre-sentence credit with the rules that go along with that. Under the other statute, post-sentencing confinement, he is entitled to credit under the rule that applies to that period of custody. I was there at the time that Mr. Lamar moved to withdraw his plea. I was his attorney. And I can tell you as a matter of fact that I never advised Mr. Lamar that if he withdrew his plea and he got a consecutive sentence, he could lose credit for all the time he spent in custody serving that earlier sentence. Because I looked at the statute in 973.04, and it was very plain to me. That language said he's going to get that credit. Now, could he lose the 177 days credit? Yes, that's a risk. Could he get more time? Could he get a consecutive sentence? Absolutely. But there was never any caution to Mr. Lamar that you're running the risk of losing the time you have already served on this sentence. And I think that's important. It's also important to note that I believe we have a double jeopardy argument in our brief, which hasn't been touched upon today. But I think it's very clear that under the double jeopardy clause, you can't be punished twice for the same offense. Under the double jeopardy clause in North Carolina versus Pierce, actually the companion case of Simpson versus Rice, the court said very clearly, if there's anything settled in the jurisprudence of England and America, it is that no man can be twice lawfully punished for the same offense. And there has never been any doubt of this rule. We think it is clear that this basic constitutional guarantee is violated when punishment already exacted for an offense is not fully credited in imposing sentence upon a new conviction for the same offense. I'd ask the court to grant credit in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I want to thank both Attorney Hintz and Attorney Prey for yet another sentence credit case. Statutes look simple. The fact situations keep changing. That concludes our hearing in 08AP2206 CR State versus Charles Lamar. If the students would remain, Justice Bradley will be out promptly. Is this okay?